I have received letters upon strange appearances of living things in tanks of rainwater that seemed inaccessible except to falls from the sky. Mr. Edward Foster, of Montego Bay, Jamaica, BWI, has told me of crayfishes that were found in a cistern of rainwater at Port Antonio, Jamaica. Still, such occurrences may be explained, conventionally. But, in the London Daily Mail, October 6, 1921, Major Harding Cox, of Newick, Sussex, tells of an appearance of fishes that is more mysterious. A pond near his house had been drained, and the mud had been scraped out. It was dry from July to November, when it was refilled. In the following May, this pond teemed with tench. One day, 37 of them were caught. Almost anybody, interested, will try to explain in terms of spawn carried by winds, or in mud on the feet of water birds, but I am going right ahead with ideas different from Darwinian principles of biologic distributions. Major Cox, who is a well-known writer, probably reviewed all conventional explanations, but still he was mystified. There would not be so much of the interesting in this story, were it not for his statement that never before had a tench been caught in this pond. Eels are mysterious beings. It may be that what are called their breeding habits are teleportations. According to what is supposed to be known of eels, appearances of eels anywhere cannot be attributed to transportations of spawn. In the New York Times, November 30, 1930, a correspondent tells of mysterious appearances of eels in old moats and in mountain tarns, which had no connection with rivers. Eels can travel over land, but just how they rate as mountain climbers, I don't know. In the Amer. Jour. Sci. 16-41, a correspondent tells of a ditch that had been dug on his farm, near Cambridge, Maryland. It was in ground that was a mile from any body of water. The work was interrupted by rain, which fell for more than a week. Then, in the rainwater that filled the ditch, were found hundreds of perch, of two species. The fishes could not have developed from spawn, in so short a time, they were from 4 to 7 inches long. But there was, here, a marksmanship that strikes my attention. Nothing is said of dead fishes lying upon the ground, at sides of the ditch, hundreds of perch arrived from somewhere, exactly in this narrow streak of water. There could have been nothing so scattering as a shower. Accept this story, and it looks as if to a new body of water, vibrating perhaps with the needs of vacancy, there was response somewhere else, and that, with accuracy, hundreds of fishes were teleported. If somebody should have faith in us, and dig a ditch and wait for fish, and get no fish, and then say that we're just like all other theorists, we explain that, with life now well established upon this earth, we regard many teleportations as mere atavisms, of no functional value. This idea of need and response, or of the actively functional, is taking us into a more advanced stage of a conception of an organic existence. For a while, we shall make no progress with this expression, having much work to do, to make acceptable that there is teleportation, whether organic, or not. Perhaps some sudden and widespread appearances of exotic plants were teleportations. Such appearances in Australia and New Zealand seem to be satisfactorily explained, as ordinary importations, but, in the London Daily News, April 1, 1924, Dr. F. E. Weiss, professor of botany, University of Manchester, tells of the Canadian pondweed that suddenly infested the canals and slow-moving rivers of England, about the year 1850, and says that the phenomenon never had been satisfactorily explained. Cardiff, Wales, Evening Express, July 1, 1919. The countryside is set by the ears. That's a queer way for a countryside or anything else to be set. There may have been a queer occurrence. It is said that, upon land, belonging to Mr. William Calvert, between the villages of Sturton and Stowe, 10 miles from Lincoln, wheat had appeared. It was 10 years since wheat had grown here. There had been barley, but this year the field had been left fallow. It was a fine crop of wheat, apparently of more robust growth than some in the cultivated fields around. Farmers from far and near were going to see this phenomenon, but nobody could explain it. Perhaps, at the same time, another mystery crop appeared somewhere else. Sunday. Express, London, August 24, 1919 that, in a field, near Ormskirk, West Lancashire, where, the year before, because of a drought, wheat had died off so that there was nothing worth harvesting, a crop of wheat had appeared. That some of the seeds that had been considered worthless should sprout would not have been considered extraordinary, but this was one of the best crops of vigorous, young wheat in West Lancashire, for the season. Though I am not a very pious theologian, I take respectful notice here. A providence that gives one snails, or covers one's property with worms, has to be called inscrutable, but we can understand a good crop of wheat better, and that is enough to make anybody grateful, until come following seasons, with no more benefactions. We take up again the phenomenon of localized repetitions, which suggest the existence of persisting translatory currents. If again we come to the seemingly preposterous, we reflect that we have only preposterous pseudo-standards to judge by. In this instance, the sending of saltwater fishes to a freshwater lake is no more out of place than, for instance, is the sending of chaplains to battleships, and, of course, in our view, it is what is loosely called nature that is doing all things. Perhaps what is called nature amuses itself by occasionally sending somewhat intelligent fellows to theological seminaries, and saltwater fishes to fresh water. Whether we theologians believe in God, or accept that there is an organism, wherein we agree is in having often to apologize for him or it. In Science, December 12, 1902, Dr. John M. Clark writes that a strange-looking fish had been caught in Lake Onondaga, western New York, and had been taken to Syracuse. Here it was identified as a squid. Then a second specimen was caught. Whatever thoughts we're trying to develop did not belong away back in the Dark Age, or the other Dark Age, of the year 1902. Just where they do belong has not been decided yet. Said Dr. Clark, with whatever reasoning abilities people had in the year 1902, there are salt springs near Lake Onondaga, so perhaps there is, in the lake, a substratum of salt water. The idea is that, for millions of years, there had been, in Lake Onondaga, ocean life down below, and fresh water things swimming around, overhead, and never mixing. Perhaps, by way of experiment, Dr. Clark put salt water and a herring in an aquarium, and then fresh water and a goldfish on top, and saw each fish keeping strictly to his own floor, which is the only way to get along as neighbors. Another scientist turned on his reasoning abilities. Professor Ortman, of Princeton University, examined one of the specimens, which, according to him, was a short-finned squid, of the North Atlantic, about 13 inches long. Professor Ortman reasoned that Atlantic fishermen use squid for bait. Very well, then other fishermen may use squid for bait. So somebody may have sent for squid, to go fishing in Lake Onondaga, and may have lost a couple of live ones. This is the science that is opposing our own notions. But for all I know, it may be pretty good science. An existence that would produce such explainers, might very well produce such fishermen. So perhaps fishermen of Lake Onondaga, with millions of worms around, send several hundred miles for squid, for bait, and perhaps Atlantic fishermen, with millions of squid available, send all the way to Lake Onondaga for worms. I've done foolisher, myself. It seems to me that there is something suggestive in the presence of large deposits of salt near this lake, but I have heard nothing of salt water in it. There's no telling about a story that was published, in the New York Times, May 2, 1882, but if it could be accepted, here would be something worth thinking about that a seal had been shot, in Lake Onondaga. Some years before the appearance of the squid, another sea creature, a sargassum fish, had been caught in Lake Onondaga. It had been exhibited in Syracuse, according to Professor Hargett, of Syracuse University, Science, N.S., 17-114. It has to be thought that these things were strays. If they were indigenous and propagated, they'd be common. For various reasons, I do not think much of an idea of an underground passage, all the way from the ocean to Lake Onondaga, but, in the London Daily Mail, July 1, 1920, a correspondent expresses an idea, like this, as to mysterious appearances and disappearances of the Barbary apes of Gibraltar, conceiving of a submarine tunnel from Gibraltar to Africa. All these creatures were well known to the staff of the signal station on the rock, many of the apes being named. The numbers sometimes change in the most unaccountable way. Well-known monkeys are absent for months, and then reappear with new, strange, adult monkeys of a similar breed. Those who know Gibraltar will agree that there is not a square yard on the rock where they could have hidden. Chicago Citizen, February 27, 1892. An alligator, 5½ feet long, found frozen to death on a bank of the Rock River, near Janesville, Wisconsin. In the field, September 21, 1895, it is said that a parakeet had appeared in a farmyard, where it was caught, at Gledhill, Ardgay, Scotland, and that, about 2 years later, another parakeet appeared in this farmyard, and was caught. Both birds were males. No one living anywhere near had missed a bird, upon either occasion. Later, we shall have expressions upon psychological, and also physiological, effects of teleportative seizures. It may be that a living thing, in California, was, upon the 1st of August, 1869, shot from point to point, and was torn to pieces, in the passage.